we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
You know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May the 27th, 2016. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our co-host, Caroline Carnery.
Hello there.
And Jen Dobell.
Hi.
Welcome, everyone. On today's show, we'll be sharing some highlights from last weekend's Animal Advocacy Camp, Vancouver's premier conference on animal advocacy. Animal Voices was a sponsor, and all three of us were there. As well as reviewing the weekend's events, we'll also play a few audio clips from speakers Anita Krines and Manisha Decca. They both gave excellent talks. It was a content-packed weekend, and we look forward to sharing our thoughts on this year's AAC for you. Then for our feature interview, we'll be speaking with author and animal activist Mark Hawthorne, who incidentally joined us at Animal Advocacy Camp last weekend as a speaker. He gave a presentation on tips and advice to avoid activist burnout. It's a relevant topic that I feel needs to be discussed and shared more often. And so today we will be having that discussion with Mark Hawthorne. He has also written about this topic in his book called Striking Out the Roots, A Practical Guide to Animal Activism. That interview is coming up in about 31 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So, Caroline, you weren't here last week, but the weekend before that, you attended the annual Canadian Health Food Association West show with me, which I've been going to for a few years now to check out and to review all the cool new vegan products that are coming out soon. What did you think?
Well, first of all, let me just say I was completely overwhelmed.
Yeah,
just
there was a lot of stuff there, wasn't there?
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. This vegan thing is trending.
Yeah,
and I was so delighted. I was so delighted by how many products they were that said vegan on them, and how enthusiastically these new products, were being marketed to us as we were walking up and down the aisle. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what I really liked and what we have to look forward to that's coming onto the market.
Right, coming soon.
There are these packages called Tasty Bites, and they're just coming on the market, and they're from India, and they're full of spices, and they're organic. And we got a long story about the women who are making this food, and I certainly hope that all of that all parts of that story were true, because it's really inspiring.
From India,
paid fair wages for this work, and that the people working in the fields are working in all organic circumstances, and there's no pesticides, and they're lentils and eggplant and rice. And the part I really like the most is that you put them in the microwave and they're done in a minute. And you have a meal in a minute.
It's definitely convenience food, which I found was kind of the theme of this show.
It absolutely
right? And
was.
I mean, that we vegans need our convenience food sometimes, right?
Well,
right?
Sometimes you're just really, really busy. And sometimes you're tired. And sometimes you just have a very short stop for lunch. And you can throw it in. Now, it's supposed to, you know, those packages are supposed to feed two people or one person if you're me. And they're just absolutely delicious. A little high on the salt content, so you wouldn't want to be gobbling those up every day. But, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks, those are a nice treat.
I have to say, what's on my mind right now are the new roasted coconut chips by Prana. The barbecue flavored ones that we were just eating before
those
the
are
show.
So good. Those are so good.
Did you like those?
I loved them.
I love them. Yeah. They're good. They'd be good on salad.
Oh, I just like eating them from the package.
The handful.
They're addictive. And it's healthy, right? It's just dried coconut, I hope, or roasted coconut. Yeah. One of my other favorite finds was Shees, which has been around for now for a while. It's made in Scotland, this dairy-free hard cheese. But they're coming out this year with new cream cheeses. They had different flavors to sample, sweet chili, garlic and herb, and cheddar style. I was just very excited about that. I was excited during the whole show. I think you were too.
I was vibrating. But cheese is absolutely on my list. And that's did you spell it already? S-H-E-E-S-Z-E.
Yeah, cheese.
Cheese.
No, S-E.
Oh, I thought it was actually with a
cheese.
Oh,
okay. I guess cheese, if you want to say it correctly.
Cheese.
Yeah.
And it was just delicious. I don't know really what's in there. But
there's no
really,
palm
really
oil. They have reformulated their recipe to not include palm oil anymore.
I'm so pleased to hear that because I don't do palm oil anymore at all.
Yeah.
And ta-da, for me, and I think for you, the scene stealer of the day was the field roast burger.
The hand-formed field burger, which I know it's available in the States because my sister says she has tried it. I haven't seen it here in Vancouver. I'm not sure if it's here yet. All of these products are either just have come out in the stores or they will be coming out. The latest was like September because I asked for everyone, like, when's this coming out? When's this coming out? So from now until September, those burgers, they were giving out quarter burgers as samples.
They were delicious. Well, you and I were standing beside each other eating this, and we were making all of these noises talking about how fabulous it was. And it really was that good. And then we walked on down the line, and we were given a quarter of another burger, a small part of it.
Oh,
and we both, I have to just laugh about that, because we both took it into our mouths, and we refused to look at each other, because it was like sawdust.
Yeah,
and I just felt like saying, because you don't want to say something, you know, these people are doing their best, but I really did want to say to those people, you need to go over there, have a quarter of that burger, and see what your competition really is.
Field roast is where it's at, and I'm so happy that more and more of their products are coming into Canada ever since the fiasco a couple of years ago where they were all pulled from Canada. So and now they're back, and I can't wait. I've been thinking about, I posted some pictures on our Facebook for those who are interested. I was going through my photos last night to post on our social media today. So if you want to check out our Facebook, and that's one of them, I'm like, oh, I have to post that one for sure. And whenever there was non-dairy ice creams, I definitely took some of those. So
they're
the coconut bliss
so
was
delicious.
Really good. And remember at the end, I'm like, I just need to find more ice cream. I actually went after the show to Nice Vice for the very first time ever, that our new ice cream. 0% dairy ice cream.
I've never been there. How is it?
And what did you think?
It's good. It's excellent. Yeah. So you can get, they have like a card of like a punch card of buy 10, get one free. I got one of those thinking, okay, now I definitely have to come here 9 more times.
And bring your friends. Mm-hmm. And take your animal voices colleagues over ice cream.
So anyway, I just wanted to kind of talk about, like, what does this all mean? What is the bigger picture here, and sort of just how, like, the trend of vegan. I remember reading, I think it was either for 2014 or 2015, that veganism, vegan foods, was one of the biggest, the top five food trends of that year. And I think that can be exemplified by what we saw at the show, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think and I was reading somewhere that it was a $5 billion a year business last year. And I only see that growing. I mean, now when you go into, you know, for instance, the other day I was just, you know, as an aside, I was at the bookstore and I was looking at decorating books. And I turned to my right and there was a whole section at eye level of vegan and vegetarian books. This was not at my feet or way above my head.
It's mainstream bookstores now,
this
too.
It's going mainstream.
Okay. Well, yay for veganism going mainstream.
Hello, darlings. Sean Treviel here for Fruit Salad. Join us every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. for community news and events, live performances and music, fantastic guests, and just general fabulousness that you'd find in a fruit salad. Support your community radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. There's nothing else like this in Vancouver or in the world. Listen in.
National Animal Rights Day is being celebrated worldwide on June the 5th and on June the 4th in Victoria, BC at the legislature. You can contact the organization in your neighborhood via Facebook or online under National Animal Rights Day. If you're from Vancouver and you want to attend the Victoria event, please join us. You can find a Facebook page entitled Vancouver Activists Attending Victoria NARD Event.
Once again, the Vancouver Humane Society is participating in the Scotiabank Charity Challenge on June the 26th. This is their most important fundraiser of the year, and you can participate by walking or running for the animals, or you can donate to the Humane Society team. Our very own Allison Cole is running with the Humane Society team again this year.
I am. I did my practice half marathon yesterday. I am running 22.1 kilometers for the animals. So I would so appreciate it if any of our listeners want to support me and Vancouver Humane Society in this endeavor. I'm actually going to post something on our Facebook today, Animal Voices Vancouver, a link if you want to do that. And thank you to Caroline for being my first sponsor yesterday. I appreciate that so much. I worked so hard yesterday, and yeah, it's every week now I'm going to do a half marathon basically until it comes up in a month.
Let me say that in order to find out more, you can contact Amy at vancouverhumanesociety.bc.ca or go to the Humane Society of Vancouver's website and follow the link on their homepage.
The Vegan Beer and Food Festival is taking place in Portland on June the 11th from 11 to 7, and tickets range from $35 to $65.
If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced in the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. So as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, last weekend was Vancouver's fifth almost annual Animal Advocacy Camp, which is a grassroots two-day conference for all those who want to advocate for the animals. It's hosted by our local organization, Liberation BC, with many community sponsors this year, including Animal Voices. We had a table there to promote the show and to sell books, and Caroline and I were seated at the Animal Voices table all weekend, where we had a fantastic view of the lineup of speakers for the two full days. And Jan, you were tabling for the organization Animal Justice.
That's right.
If you want to find out more about the conference, you can have a listen to our May 13th show at animalvoices.org, where we did an interview with our guest co-host Darren Chang there, who was the key organizer for the event. But today we want to share some highlights with you on our impressions of the weekend's presentations and activities. So to start, the conference weekend was just packed with an array of speakers. That's what it was mainly comprised of, from morning until the evening. Many, many speakers. Jen, what were some of the speaker highlights for you?
Well, we actually had two Mexican farm workers who were working in BC, and they were brought in to speak with us and share their experiences of working in poor conditions on local farms. They work very long days with little pay and very little job security due to being part of such an exploited and vulnerable population. They live in crowded conditions, and basically they don't have much of a life outside of their work life. Another speaker that was quite memorable to me was Jordan Reichhart from Victoria of mm-hmm. Animal Alliance Environmental Voters Party of Canada. And he spoke about the importance and lack of animal rights in our political decision making. And it's nice to see someone like that fighting for the animals in government.
Yeah, and I got to learn more about Jordan's position in politics. We actually had him on the show last September to speak about this new party that he has become a member of. And he was telling us how, I believe he said that to form a federal party in Canada, you only need one person, right, to be interested. So basically anyone can do so, and that's great. And regarding the migrant workers here in BC, that was something that was a shock to me. I didn't know we had migrant workers. You hear about those conditions in the States. And I want to point out that human rights is animal rights and vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. We are all animals, and it's very relevant in our whole social justice system. And I was very shocked to learn from them, to learn what their conditions are, things that I had only read about before. And this is happening here in BC. Caroline, what were some of the highlights of speakers for you?
I was really struck. Well, all of the speakers were just outstanding, but I was really struck by the diversity and the advocacy tactics. So we heard from the folks at No New Animal Lab who had to join us by Skype from the United States. Because
they couldn't get into the country.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Because I guess as animal rights activists, I guess they have
a record.
They have a bit of a record. So, you know, on one hand, they're talking about they're participating in what they call pressure campaigns. And these people are out on the streets and they are angry and they are looking up the names and addresses of executives and CEOs and, people in charge of making decisions that will really fundamentally hurt animals. And they are going to their doors and they are knocking on them and they are yelling and they are meeting people right in their home. So this is a very angry style of protesting. And it has real urgency because once the animal lab is built at the University of Washington in Washington State, it's going to be there and animals are going to start being experimented on that day. So time is of the essence. And then on the other hand, we have Anita Kreins in the SAVE movement, and she started the Toronto Pig Save. And now that movement has just grown. And she cites Tolstoy and Gandhi and comes at this from a perspective of inviting people to come into this non-confrontational environment and to bear witness.
And she calls it a love-based approach.
She does. And so those are two opposites that are very, very effective. And so what I found interesting about this, you know, over the course of the weekend was that I saw that there are just so many ways for people to be involved. You can be involved politically. You can be involved in these high pressure tactics. You can be involved in these vigils. You can be a letter writer lobbying all the time. You can start petitions. You can do undercover videos. You can report violence every single time you see it against animals. And really there is just, regardless of your personality type or style, there's a way for you to plug into animal advocacy.
Yeah, and I would have to say that one of the successes of this event this weekend was for people to find their niche, to find what spoke to them, right? Like what tactics they want to perhaps take on in their lives as either seasoned or new animal advocates. Not everyone there identified as an active animal activist. I always say it's an event for people who want to advocate for animals. You can go there and just learn. Like a friend of mine who was helping us, Patrick, he was totally new to all of this information and he left that conference very informed. He took it all in. He was open-minded, having not known about any of these issues before. So I want to say it was also a great event for newbies as well. And I think, like, how did you two feel like the vibe of the whole event was? I felt it was very welcoming and that it was a great way to build community engagement because we were all like-minded in there for the same reason.
I agree. It was really nice to see a lot of activists who spend most of their time behind their computers able to see each other again in real
life. That's true too, yeah.
We're all so busy with all of our animal advocacy projects that we rarely see each other sometimes. So it was like family getting back together. Lots of hugs.
Okay, and then I want to make a quick mention of the food, because what is a vegan event without great food, mm-hmm. right? So
it was outstanding.
Yeah, loved it. I'm still thinking about David's salad dressing. And by the way, he put the last of the Just Mayo into our salad dressing. I don't think there's any more Just Mayo in Vancouver.
No, except for two in my storage room, which I'm hoarding onto.
Your house might get robbed tonight.
I also thought the food for Maternal Abundance was out of this world.
Yeah.
And then we had a dinner. If we didn't have enough food, we had a dinner on the Sunday night just as a social gathering for people who wanted to. We had 46 people come out.
Whoa.
So I organized all the food, by the way, and the after party.
You did a great job, Allison.
Yeah, thank you. And anyways, we had a feast at Po Kong Vegetarian Restaurant.
Sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, you really missed a great feast, and they are so good to us. So yeah, I wanted to play a couple of clips now. We were speaking about Anita Kreins. I really, really enjoyed her talk, as I think everyone did, judging by the tears in the room. It was emotional. It was impactful and really hard-hitting. And as Caroline mentioned, she's the founder of the SAVE movement in Toronto Pig Save. And we've had her on the show before. She's a very lovely person, a role model to me as someone to look up to as an animal advocate. And in the Save Movement, animal advocates gather to hold vigils near slaughterhouses where animals are being transported in by trucks to be murdered shortly after. So this movement has grown in such a short amount of time and is taking place at locations all over the world now. So I have this short audio clip of Anita's talk that I would like to share now.
We do what we do so we can bear witness together and build community. So here you see people of all ages, all classes, all colors, coming together in a community organizing approach and bearing witness together. We leaflet, talk to the drivers. In the summer, we give the pigs water and fruit. And we talk to the slaughterhouse workers. As I said, we have a love-based approach. I mean, all of us must have, you know, backgrounds, whether, you know, farming or whether my mother said she remembers her father killing a sow when she was in the former Yugoslavia, and she would never forgot the screams. It didn't make her go vegetarian, but later in life she became vegetarian and vegan. So I'm sure all of us have stories, whether it's our own personal stories or in our families. And so we use a love-based approach, non-judgmental. We talk to the workers, and workers are often victims too, in a really real sense. Not always. I mean, there's accountability and we're all accountable. The organizing imperative is to move people into some form of activism in which it becomes a regular and important part in their daily lives. So community organizing is for everyone. It's about everyone is a leader, and a good leader brings up leadership in others. So that's our job. We have to nurture leadership in others. There's not a hierarchy. There's, like, we work together as a team, and that's how we build a grassroots movement. So Gandhi said, I really love this quote by Gandhi, he said, that real change, with right prevailing over justice, would arrive not in some dim and distant future, but within a measurable time, the measure being the measure of the effort we put forth. So, in other words, it depends on how much resources and time we put into organizing. If we put more resources, more time, the world will change faster. It's that simple. If we can convert other people to become vegan, and more importantly, activists, the world will change faster.
So the main message that I got from that, she's saying how if we put more time into organizing, the world will change faster. What do you think?
I think it's absolutely true. I also think that when you get charged with criminal mischief,
as she has been done,
and you get a worldwide media campaign out of it, that also helps too. That was a huge catalyst for changing things. So I do think that I agree with her absolutely in terms of the amount of time, but I also think that we need to be strategic in how we approach advocacy. And I think Anita absolutely knew that she was going to be charged. She had been charged many times before. And, you know, her lawyers are making the most of this. And she has a 5-day trial coming up.
She's had media all over the world because of this trial.
She's had media in Russia.
In August.
Yeah.
Oh, in Russia.
Right. In Russia. She's been all over the world. This is all over Europe. This is all, you know, just, it's everywhere. And it's you know, obviously, you know, they had been organizing for 5 years. But definitely that was the catalyst that brought this into a public sphere and has given her a lot of support. So I think work hard, most definitely. And I think, and I love her approach of dealing with love and reaching out to the employees and not making them the enemy. They've now set up a hotline for workers to call in.
I want to talk about that on a future show. It's a slaughterhouse worker helpline that they're doing with In Defense of Animals. So another clip that we'd like to play from Animal Advocacy Camp last weekend is by Manisha Deca. She's a law professor at the University of Victoria, and she gave an incredible talk. In this clip, she questions the actions of people who decide to give acknowledgement to certain animals over others in their deaths, and she poses an important question, which you'll hear here.
Just to conclude, I'd like to pose a question that gets posed more and more often in critical theory of all sorts. You know, when is life livable? Quoting from Judith Butler, it's very influential work, specifically her work on kind of precarious life and frames of war. The question asks, in whose deaths do we grieve? When do we see a dying as a death, and when do we grieve that? I'll just recall our attention to something in the news over the New Year period several months ago from Ontario. I don't know if anyone here caught the coverage of the barn fires that were happening in Ontario. And, you know, Canada's national newspapers, the Globe and Mail, the National Post included, ran obituaries for those horses, right? We had write-ups for the horses saying, like, we have a human write-up. This is who died. This is who we have to grieve. So on one level, you know, that's amazing. Just think, you had mainstream public attention to the death of animals that was on what we normally accord to human beings, or to the valued human beings in our society, right? Obituaries. And we're certainly grieving the lives of those humans. At the same time, you have this letter to the editor in the Globe and Mail from Vicky Facteau, the director of the Canadian Coalition for Farm Animals. And to quote, I'd just like to leave you with her words. She writes, "In the past year, there have been 49 barn fires in Canada where animals perished. In 9, the number killed is unknown. In 40 of the fires, a total of 142,469 animals died, including the 42 horses that were receiving media coverage for the equine barn fire. These other animals include cows, chickens, pigs, ducks, sheep, and goats. Less than a week ago, 50,000 ducks were killed in a barn fire in Quebec. Why is it that these other barn fires rarely make the news, let alone the front page? Surely the other animals suffered as much as the horses did." And her question is rhetorical, right? You can see what she's arguing about why. And just to connect it back to my argument today, the talk today, if we have animal rights organizations bringing forward test case, groundbreaking litigation that repeats arguments that can only let the horses in, we see how many animals are excluded from kind of the impact of that work.
Well, I mean, that's really eye-opening, isn't it? I mean, which deaths do we grieve as human beings? We grieve the deaths of people who are close to us. We grieve the deaths of animals that are close to us. And then we have this, you know, it seems like we've carved out these 42 horses as these pet slash celebrities that have a different status. So we compartmentalize animals. You know, we have these, we have wildlife, we have livestock, we have pets, and we have these pet celebrities. And some we grieve and celebrate, and others we don't. And, you know, as she mentions, the cows, the chickens, the pigs, the ducks, the goats in 49 barn fires. In one fire, I can remember seeing 2,000 pigs died.
And over 140,000 in total, yeah, she mentioned.
142,000 other animals,
and 42 yes. horses that were grieved.
And they all received their own obituary. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it is really, really an eye-opener that, you know, these animals that we deem livestock, just by the mere fact of calling them that, we, notwithstanding the fact that they have a central nervous system, it means that their suffering doesn't matter. So I think we really, really have to challenge ourselves on speciesism and look at the facts that these non-human animals have exactly the same apparatus for feeling pain that we have. And, you know, we have to bring their stories forward and keep them in the news. And when we see newspapers reporting, now, when I went through all of this before, when we were reporting on Animal Voices, I went through dozens and dozens of news articles on the cases, and they reported on whether the farmer had insurance. They reported on the heroic acts of the firefighters. They reported on how much of the barns were destroyed and what part was left. Not once did they mention, not even once, these animals suffered in great pain, mm-hmm. with their flesh burning and their lungs burning.
And without in that these acknowledgement, infernos. People just put it out of their minds. So there's no acknowledgement for them. There's nothing. It's like they didn't even exist.
So I think we have to start writing in every single time we see one of these barn fires reported. Again, this is advocacy. Write in and do as this writer did. Say, why is it that we're not reporting on that? And actually challenge the status
Absolutely.
Quo.
Absolutely. I think Good sometimes idea. Media doesn't understand that there's other angles, because they're just people too. And I've experienced this before when I was interning at a TV station. I'll tell that story another time. And I realized, like, oh, they don't have all the answers. They don't understand all the angles. It's up to me to let them know. I want to thank Darren Chang so much for being the key organizer of this event in Liberation BC. We've shared with you some of the highlights of last weekend's animal advocacy camp here in Vancouver. We hope this will inspire you to attend next year or to start such a grassroots event in your own city or town.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
So last week we were announcing and celebrating that in Montreal, the horse-drawn carriages had been banned. Well, this week, we are sadly reversing that news.
I can't even believe it.
Oh, it's just so sad for the horses.
We were just celebrating this last year, last week, a week ago, this happened. And now, what day did this happen this week, Caroline?
See, he announced on Wednesday.
Okay, yeah, I was sleeping, so I missed it.
Yeah, so the mayor announced that he would backtrack on his decision last week to impose the year-long moratorium on the popular caleches, as they're called there. And his reversal came after the Quebec Superior Court just had granted the drivers a temporary injunction that would have allowed them to continue working at least until June 3rd. And when Coderre first announced he would revoke 24 permits last week, he said that the city would use the year to create new guidelines for the tourist draw. It's just so sad that tourists support it at all. On Wednesday, he said the city would still proceed with new regulation and study the horses, their stables, and public safety. He added that the city would keep a close eye on the drivers and the horses over the summer months and that officials wouldn't hesitate to give out fines.
So does that mean he said the city is going to be keeping out a close eye? Do they have inspectors for this? For this issue?
Well, maybe that will be part of the regulations. I haven't seen any of the draft regulations, but I'm hoping that that might be the case.
Right. And so they're going to have some kind of a protocol where, you know, horse-drawn carriages aren't really banned anywhere, right? Like, what do they have to start, right? And it just, it's such a large thing. It's such a large tradition to reverse, right? So it's like, how do we get this started?
Well, I really think that, you know, coming back again, we all have to report what we see. We all have to have our cell phones with us. And when we see animal abuse happening and we see sores on animals or animals in distress or overheated or not giving water or falling down, we have to take pictures and we have to report that every single time. Because if we don't, nothing's going to happen.
Absolutely. Good idea.
So, Jen, you have a story.
I do. So for those of you who are following the ongoing court case between the Vancouver Aquarium and Gary Charbonneau, who is the director of the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, we have some exciting news for you. Gary won the leave to appeal the court's injunction to have the contested segments of his film removed. And these include a total of 5 minutes from the film, including photos and video that the aquarium alleges is copyrighted material, and which Gary's lawyer argues that it is fair use. So this is really great because it's getting more media attention onto the issue.
So for those non-legal types among us, only me, I guess, so this means before the court had said he had to remove these 5 minutes of images from his film, which is now what is available online to see, the edited part. Mm-hmm. So he appealed that, and you're saying he won that appeal, so that means that he's allowed to put these images back in?
No, it means he gets a chance to go to court with his lawyer again and appeal the decision of the last judge who said that it needed to be removed.
Okay,
and I do believe that we have a very strong case. I was sitting at the back of the courtroom, and Gary has an excellent lawyer, Arden Beddoes, and he argues very effectively. And I thought he made an excellent case, and I was really surprised at her decision. He made such a strong case. But this is actually a monumental case for freedom of speech in cases where corporations try to silence those who critique practices which harm animals. So this is going to have implications on many fronts. I'm really thankful that we have a lawyer who's helping us with this and that Gary is continuing to fight this.
Yeah, keep us updated on that.
We
have time for one more news
story. Oh, can I just add one thing that's really important? We need everybody's assistance to sign the petition in support of Bill S-203, and we will be putting up a link on the Animal Voices website today. We only have until June the 18th to get as many signatures as we can in support of this bill, which will ban the captivity of cetaceans for entertainment purposes in Canada. Thank you.
Last week, Argentina made headlines when they granted an orangutan named Sandra the status of a non-human person and the freedom she needed to be moved out of the Buenos Aires Zoo. She's paving the way now for other apes because activists in Ireland with the Animal Rights Network are bringing a similar legal action as in Argentina in the courts in Ireland.
Thanks for the news.
Our feature interview today is with Mark Hawthorne. He is a well-known author and animal advocate from California, and we had the pleasure of seeing him speak at last weekend's animal advocacy camp here in Vancouver. At the conference, he spoke about avoiding activist burnout, which he has also written about in his book, Striking at the Roots, A Practical Guide to Animal Activism. Today, he is here to speak to us about avoiding animal activist burnout. Welcome back to the Animal Voices show, Mark.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for being here today to discuss a subject that you've experienced yourself and have also researched and written about. To start, what is the definition of burnout? And can you give us some examples of when and how this can happen in animal activism?
Well, basically, the term burnout is a metaphor that describes a state of physical, mental, and emotional exhaustion. And it's similar to wood succumbing to a fire. It is generally brought about by chronic stress. And for those of us fighting for animal liberation, it's often caused by prolonged exposure to suffering and injustice. Now, burnout is different for everyone. It can come after a few days of doing undercover work, or it can happen after years of working in a shelter. It really depends on the individual, but the longer a person is involved in activism, the more they are exposed to upsetting videos, for example, graphic images, stress, even unpleasant people, the more likely they are to encounter it. And I should add, Allison, that those unpleasant people do not have to be non-vegans. Even dealing with certain disagreeable vegans in the movement can burn us out on activism as well.
Yeah, I hear you on that. So what are some signs and symptoms that we should be aware of that can indicate stress and burnout, just because a person may be so entrenched in what they are doing that they may not realize that they're burnt out?
Right, right. Well, there's a lot of them. And as I mentioned, they were physical, mental, and emotional symptoms. So I'll go over a few of each category. For physical symptoms, you'd want to look for like headache and digestive troubles, muscle tension, grinding teeth, sore jaw, trouble in your sleeping habits, either oversleeping or insomnia. As far as mental symptoms of stress go, they could be memory loss, difficulty making decisions, inability to concentrate, confusion. And then as far as emotional symptoms of stress, they would be like depression, anger, hypersensitivity, apathy, lack of self-confidence. Those are the main ones.
Okay. Well, it's such a huge struggle in the animal rights movement to achieve the end goal, which is animal liberation. And often this thought can be overwhelming to us. How do you feel we can emotionally cope with the big picture of having this huge fight for the animals that often seems that we are just too slowly chipping away at, and also the guilt that may come with that for perhaps just not being effective enough? How can we mentally process this feeling, which I feel is also a part of being burnt out?
Oh, right. Yeah, that is the big challenge, isn't it? Well, first of all, I think we need to remember how much progress we've made. Just look at the captivity industry. A few years ago, we never would have dreamed that large entities like SeaWorld and Ringling Brothers here in the United States would decide to phase out their use of orcas and elephants, but that's what's happening. And on the vegan side, one of the examples I gave at the conference was that when I went vegan, it was difficult to find a good vegan burger. And today we have Amy's Drive-Thru, which is this great restaurant down the street from me that offers 100% plant-based burgers that even diehard meat eaters enjoy. So we should remind ourselves we're making major strides. We also have countless small victories we can be thankful for. Every day, new people are embracing veganism and learning more about animal rights. And that is, you know, directly because of our efforts, everybody who's an activist. And every time you tell someone why you're vegan, every time you lend someone a vegan cookbook or make them a vegan meal, every time you send a letter to an editor, you're making a difference and it all adds up. Now, having said that, Allison, I know this movement can be very discouraging. We are speaking for a marginalized group that is exploited by most people on the planet, and we're up against the colossal marketing budgets of animal agriculture, the animal research industry, the fashion industry, and so many others. It can be tremendously distressing and depressing to see people eating animals and wearing their skin. But the vast majority of activists I've interviewed or spoken with about this have told me that the thing that helped them relieve depression and guilt the most was being involved in the movement at whatever level.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you've said that we should create activism that is a good fit for us and that nourishes us. So on that end, can you explain how that helps to avoid activist burnout, since that's also the thing that may cause it?
Well, I think finding a good fit in the movement is one of the most important steps toward avoiding burnout. In other words, if you're an extrovert, you'll probably find it nourishing to organize campaigns. If you're an introvert, you may feel more comfortable writing articles or letters to editors. When I interviewed Zoe Weil for my book, Striking at the Roots, she told me that the first thing she did as an activist was leafleting, and she hated it. People ignored her. They made rude comments. They threw away her leaflets on the ground. But instead of giving up on activism, she evaluated her talents and her passions and just really imagined what type of activism she would enjoy most. She decided she wanted to teach, and she found out she loved it, and she went on to establish the Institute for Humane Education. So it's really finding that good fit that's critical.
Absolutely. And I think that if you hate leafleting, that's going to cause stress. And say you forced yourself to leaflet every day for months, that's going to cause burnout, right? But whereas if you nourish yourself by doing something you love, I love doing radio. Although I have to say too that it does cause me burnout just because of the amount of time that I put into it, right? So it's hard. It's hard to find a balance. Right. And I think one of the solutions is self-care. Now, this is something that I've been learning about and trying to implement in my life in the last few years. I think it's an important part of dealing with the burnout. And yeah, I'm wondering, what advice do you have on how we can practically and logistically in our daily lives deal with stress and burnout via self-care? And if you could start first by just explaining, what is self-care?
Sure. That's a great question. And it's one that we really ignore, I think, in the movement. Self-care is really about taking the time to be aware of your well-being as it pertains to your emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual states, and then taking steps to make sure that those areas of yourselves are healthy and balanced. And while that might sound simple, it's not really simple for a lot of activists who tend to believe that they must always put themselves last. They may not be the type to spend an hour a day meditating or reading fiction or taking time away from helping animals. They may think they are being selfish if they do. Now, we all know that our physical needs are. We need air, we need food, we need water and sleep. We don't seem to feel shame in getting these needs met, but where we, and I think animal activists in particular, seem to fall short is in getting our other needs met, especially emotional needs. Feeling loved and accepted, feeling you're doing a good job, even feeling happy. There seems to be this unwritten rule that we're asking too much to have these needs met. I think one way to approach this is to start with a good support network, people you trust, with whom you can relax and enjoy yourself. They don't necessarily have to be fellow activists, but they should be people who are aware of your activism and they respect it. So they understand the stress you are under at times, and they'll be supportive if you feel like talking about it. Humor is one of the most effective coping mechanisms we have, I think. It relieves tension, it reduces anger, it enhances our ability to carry on with tasks, and laughter even, as I point out in the book, it even aids in our physical well-being by increasing oxygen, boosting our immune system, and producing a high level of cognitive functioning. And moreover, as you laugh, your brain releases endorphins, the body's natural painkillers. Also, for activists working in campaigns with others, humor helps break down hierarchies and build rapport. It kind of binds people together and builds intimacy.
What about taking care of your body? Why is that so important?
Well, you know, that's the first thing. I think that's the ultimate thing that we need to begin working on, is we really need to get enough sleep. We need to get healthy food in our bodies, because if we don't have the physical stamina that we need to carry on as activists and just in our daily activities, the things that we need to do every day, we're not going to be able to cope emotionally or mentally. So I think the physical part is really where it begins.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. So you've written about that it's important to take part in interests outside of the animal rights movement. With being involved in the animal rights community, I think it's so easy to just want to go to vegan dinners and potlucks and talks and animal advocacy camp and everything else that has to do with veganism, especially if you have the privilege of living somewhere here like Vancouver, where we have all those activities happening all the time. So right. Why is it important to take part in different interests as a method of avoiding burnout, say activities that have nothing to do with animal advocacy or veganism?
Well, I think it comes down to balance, really. If your entire life is built on activism, you've built your life on one support. You know, a house built on one support would collapse. So I think having a variety of interests and activities outside the movement is a common sense practice. We don't all do that, of course, because I think at some level it feels safer for some of us to keep within our little vegan world and not venture out. But we really need to try to find balance. Just find things that give you pleasure and try not to turn every hobby or interest outside the movement into a way to help animals.
In your book, Striking at the Roots, you've written about activist burnout that you've experienced yourself. I wonder if you can talk to us about this and what coping mechanisms have you used yourself?
Sure. I've had a couple bouts with depression during my activist years. One was after spending time inside a factory farm, and another was after learning the many ways rabbits are exploited. I was involved in rabbit rescue for quite some time and still am peripherally. And I was having nightmares. I was feeling really down, and I happened to tell an art therapist about it, and she recommended I take a box and decorate it. So I painted a small wooden box with a chicken and a goat, a pig, a cow, and a rabbit. And the therapist told me that when I was hurting or if I had a nightmare, that I should create something to represent the pain, and whether it's a drawing or a poem or just, you know, write down the nightmare or anything and just put it in the box. And then the grief or the sorrow or the anger would reside in the box and no longer with me. So that actually helped quite a bit. And I've also gone to therapy. I don't see, you know, any shame in that. And as I said before, I try to get plenty of sleep and exercise, and I try to eat healthy. And I'm also really fortunate that my wife, Lauren Onellis, is a longtime activist, and she understands how painful it can be. So we try to do fun things as often as we can. We love to travel, even if it's just to spend a day away from the house. And most Friday nights we make dinner and spend the evening watching silly movies on Netflix and DVDs. We really love the old Mystery Science Theater 3000 shows. And while I'm not saying that activists should self-medicate, I will say we often enjoy an adult beverage while we watch. I also try to read non-animal rights books as often as I can.
Oh, what kind of books are you into that are not animal rights books?
I love the writing of Bill Bryson and Tom Ryan, who wrote this wonderful book called Following Atticus, about Tom and the dog that he was his good friend, who unfortunately died recently. They hiked all the mountains in New Hampshire. And it's just, I love reading history. I love reading about, I love reading biographies. So just, you know, anything I can do to get away for even a couple of hours from the animal rights movement, I find to be helpful.
You know what I want to do this summer, as the weather starts getting nicer here in Vancouver and we have wonderful beaches, and I happen to live very, very close within walkable distance to Canada's only nude beach, actually, Wreck Beach, which is a lovely environment.
Oh, wow.
You go down there and it's on the very west end of Canada. So there, all you see is water. You can't see anything mm-hmm. of the city. I just want to go down there and read a book. It might be an animal rights book, but maybe I can make a point of it not being an animal rights book. Just something that's just, you know, it's just pleasure. And right. I want to go down there and read a book for a couple of hours. And I want to try to do that a couple times this year. I was hoping once per month starting this month, but that's not going to happen. But hopefully next month I can get that going. So I guess the point of me talking about this is that I find that sometimes you just really have to physically and mentally carve out that time and to make a commitment to it, because it's really easy to otherwise just sort of get caught up in your activism, because you know, the animals need us and there's so much that needs to be done. And I can't possibly stop doing all this work that needs to be done when there's no end to it. It's not like, oh, yeah, if we get this much done, we have achieved animal liberation. Like, it's a constant struggle. And as you were saying, you and your wife, you know, you carve out that time for yourselves. It seems like that's something that you definitely have to do and be aware of. Like, you have to make sure that you're doing that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that even if you need to write it in your daily calendar, you know, that you're going to set away this amount of time. With Lauren,
I do that.
Good. And with us, you know, we know that on Friday nights, unless there's some, you know, major thing that needs our attention, we're going to shut off our computers by 7 o'clock, and we're going to spend as much time as we need, you know, 4 or 5 hours if necessary, just relaxing and laughing. And we're not going to talk about activism. We're not going to talk about the movement. We're just going to try to have fun. And it has benefited us immensely. And so I think making that personal commitment to yourself, you know, activists are animals too. And we need to take care of ourselves if we're going to be effective in the movement.
Good point. So I have one final question for you. It's something that I think of sometimes, just how most people in the world, they don't suffer from animal activist burnout. That's because they aren't animal activists. For those of us who do act for the animals, it's because we are aware of the issues and we're burdened with this knowledge that causes us to fight and to speak up for the animals, and that can cause burnout. So what are your thoughts on humans who are aware and have this knowledge and therefore suffer from the stress of it because of it versus those, the rest of the world, who live in blissful ignorance? It just seems unfair to me that we're fighting and having all this stress on us because of all those who don't. Is there some way to create balance in this situation? And do you think it's a moral duty to know about the issues of exploitation facing animals today, even though that can lead to stress and burnout?
Wow. Well, those are big questions.
Deep questions.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it makes me think of Carol J. Adams, the author and activist. And she calls this awareness that you're talking about traumatic knowledge. And it's doubly painful for activists to have this knowledge, because we realize that at one time we actively contributed to the suffering of animals. I'm often reminded of the time before I was a vegan or an activist when I went to Pamplona in Spain to run with the bulls, and how ashamed I felt afterward. I mean, I was directly complicit in the deaths of those bulls who were later killed in the afternoon. But becoming an advocate has helped me heal, because I know I am doing something active to make a difference. Now, I'm not sure people are living in blissful ignorance. I mean, to some degree, yes, that occurs, but I believe most people are aware at some level about animal suffering, and they make a very conscious choice to ignore it. Most people actually agree that animal cruelty is wrong. They just choose convenience over conscience. I would say that regarding balance, I would say that the balance can be found in doing our best to show people that they are not living their values. If they wouldn't treat their dog or cat or rabbit the way animals are treated when they are raised and killed for food or used in labs or held captive in tiny cages and tanks, then the only way to be consistent in their ethics is to go vegan. I think we have a moral duty to be aware about animal exploitation, but I don't think this needs to come at the expense of our emotional health. You know, a psychologically damaged activist isn't good for the cause or animals, really. I'm reminded of a book I wrote a few years ago called Bleeding Hearts, in which I detail, sometimes very graphically, the abuse of animals around the world. And this was a painful book for me to write. It took me 5 years, and in part because it was so painful. And I hear from people who worry about reading it, and I always tell them, if you get to a passage you find too graphic, just skip to the next section. All right, there are no photos in the book. I want people to be educated so they can speak from a place of knowledge, but not give them nightmares. And I'd also like to emphasize that vegans and other activists do not have to be perfect. Right? We don't have to have all the answers. Just try your best.
That's very good advice to end with. Thank you for that. Really wise words. Thank you for being on the show today, Mark, to speak about how we can avoid activist burnout. For more information, please check out Mark's book, Striking at the Roots, A Practical Guide to Animal Activism. And you can also pre-order his new book called A Vegan Ethic, which is coming out on July 29th. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you, Allison.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show, Friday, June the 3rd. It's our World Oceans Day show, and we'll be presenting a feature interview with Dr. Lori Marino, who is the president of the Whale Sanctuary Project, a new endeavor whose mission is to establish a model seaside sanctuary where cetaceans can be rehabilitated or can live permanently in an environment that maximizes well-being and autonomy and is as close as possible to their natural habitat. We are here at Animal Voices, want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe to the show via iTunes. We're closing the show now with a song that our past co-host Jenny Rempel actually wrote about activist burnout. It's called The Point of No Return, and it's performed here by Jenny and her band Hello Harmless. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to animals.
I've only got one choice to make. Should I let you go or stay? Till tomorrow becomes today, and I've made a big mistake. I don't know what it sounds like after I walk. To leave, but I don't know how to stay. I'm fading fast, I'm fading.